Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Okay, welcome back. I have another phone call segment coming up with Keith Broders, and we will be talking about certifying and or testing our public servants. But before we do, I should warn you that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that actually provides you with the process and actually talks about the foundation of our constitutional republic and getting the federal government back into that framework. If you want to call in, the number is 215-867-8255. It looks like, as I look out the window and as I look through the news, it looks like the government might be relinquishing all of its unconstitutional powers. Oops. No. That was just a tree falling. And no one was in the woods to hear that. So as I go through the news and as I look at every indication, it seems like the federal government, and this actually supports the concept that no one in power ever relinquishes power they have stolen from anybody. They will continually exert tyranny. And so because of that, the only way we are going to get the federal government into compliance with the Constitution is when we actually demand that process to be done by the states. So we don't go to D.C., we don't do protests, we don't do marches. What we do is we go to our state capitals and we demand our state legislators do their job. It's just a matter of educating, and that's what this show's about. As I talk several times, I will reiterate this in the future as well, that this show is designed to educating those state legislators as well as those grassroots leaders in the states and counties in getting them informed so that they know what to do. Because it's all about, and I'm going to be providing another detailed presentation on how to take back the brand and how to control your strategy. Because bottom line, corporations do it all the time. That's how corporations continually drive themselves. Why do you think Apple became a trillion-dollar company? They didn't just fall backwards into that. There was a lot of work. And as a matter of fact, if you remember, Apple was on the ropes until Steve Jobs came back. I mean, Apple was really, a lot of people didn't see Apple being viable in the future because of their uniqueness, because they didn't really have any competition. There's nobody that competes with Apple. Now, there's a lot of companies that compete on the IBM side, if you want to call it that, or the Intel chip and so forth. And Apple's actually diversified themselves because now they're actually playing in the Intel chip. They got rid of their own chips. And actually, I'm going to talk a little bit about computers today. So, because it's important and it goes in hand with the deep state. So I've got some things for you to consider. But again, like I was saying, there really is no sign of the federal government ever relinquishing any of its power. So what we have to do is we have to step in. And I hope you're willing to join in. And a part of that process is this groveling, this little bit of, you know, please help. If you have a phone, you've got a computer, you're willing to step in and help, all you've got to do is just send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. Or all you have to do is join the Constitution Club. That's another step in helping. They, as we talked Tuesday, it was Tuesday this week, I played that conversation I had with Keith regarding the 17th Amendment and pushing that agenda forward through those state legislators in bringing that up with them. I also want to, you know, get you to start really considering what more you can do, but just by tuning in, that helps. And by getting people to understand, hey, there is actually a message. The podcasts are available at reclaimingtherepublic.org. A lot of content there. Anybody can get very smart from the reclaimingtherepublic.org regarding Republic Review. So let me just jump forward into the news. And I told you there was going to be a string of all sorts of personal assassination attempts by the left. And as a matter of fact, a new one just came out on CNN. They gave him a great spotlight, James Roche, who is Kavanaugh's former roommate at Yale back in 83. And he's claiming that Kavanaugh lied and, you know, is making a big deal about the fact that he was lying. Again, here is another allegation without any corroboration. And so this is another ideologue as well. There's a reason why he's sitting in a CNN studio to actually be, you know, face to face with what's the guy, Anderson Cooper, white hair, what have you. It is an ideologue speaking to an ideological network that is literally trying to drive this. I was speaking to a very close friend who watches mainstream media today, and they were basically, you know, bothered by the way they've been depicting Kavanaugh. They go, I just don't like this guy. And I go, okay, so what are your sources? And for the most part, this close friend had basically been saying, well, I just watched the local ABC, NBC news, and the way they're portraying him, I mean, I just don't like the looks in his eyes. See, my friends, that is the power of the manipulation of the mainstream media. And they go, I don't understand. And this friend was asking, well, why is there such a huge protest over this? And I go, it's not because this person is evil, because this person I was talking to completely understands and agrees that the Democrats are communists, that they're evil. A lot of them are very, very nefarious in trying to overturn our constitutional republic. So they completely understand all of that. And they go, but why is this such a contention? I mean, this isn't a good guy, right? And I go, no, they've been deceiving you to get you to think that. He's not a perfect guy. He's not great, but he's much better than most of the other jurists on the Supreme Court. And as a matter of fact, I prefer him over almost everybody on the Supreme Court, except for probably Alito and Thomas. But you got to give this guy time. He's definitely hands down better than Roberts, and he's definitely better than Ginsburg or Sotomayor and or Kagan. So, bottom line, are you kidding me? What we've got to do is we literally have to start forcing these people, you know, that want to come out of the woodwork to get their 15 minutes of fame. Then I would like to see if Mr. Roche, who is claiming he's lying, will he, Mr. Roche, be willing to take the trifecta of lie detector tests? I've talked to him. I've talked about these before, not just the polygraph. The polygraph, we can get any type of outcome we want out of a polygraph test. Because believe me, I've been in the intelligence community for a long time, and there are ways you can manipulate the outcome of those things. But there is a voice stress analyzer that is equally as accurate. And the most accurate is the brain scan. Let's give these guys the trifecta. Can you pass all three of these? I will say this, that there will be, if you understand Aesop's fables and the sour grapes, there will be a lot of dirty foxes screaming sour grapes after this weekend, because they will not be happy that they could not thwart this nomination. Now, they may try to make political hay, but I am telling you, if they want to really, really push the middle class, and I would say those people who really do love America, over that edge, then let them continue to try to impeach and go down this path. Because as they use this hyperbole, it is only working against them. They are showing their real truth, their true colors, whatever you want to talk about. But let me give you something to think about, because I've been saying this for a long time, and I want to give you this in a scriptural reference. Anybody who makes an acquisition or inquisition and or an allegation, and they bear, you know, the testimony that this person did this, then if it is proven that they have been falsely accused by this accuser, then that accuser should hold should basically face the same type of punishment that person is going to, that would have had to face, whether that be rape or what have you. And this is out of Deuteronomy chapter 19, This is verse 18. And the judges shall make diligent inquisition. And behold, if the witness be a false witness and hath testified falsely against his brother, and then shall ye do unto him as he had thought to have done unto his brother. So shalt thou put the evil away from among you. In other words, you want to get these people to, you know, actually, you know, hold their breath and, you know, and literally hold them accountable for actually lying. This is what you do. And it's not like this is a problem that has been, you know, just discovered or scratched up. Obviously, this goes back a few years, because even in Deuteronomy, they had this same insanity going forward. And so let me just say this. I've got about less than a minute left. When we come back from the break, I'm going to be having a conversation with Keith Broders about, and he's from the Constitution Club. We're going to be talking about the concept of certifying, testing, licensing, whatever you want to call it. I think that this should be done at the state level, and the states should really, you know, take ownership of this, but we will get more into that. And I've talked a lot about this in the past regarding the brand of the party and how states should really have control. I mean, what an embarrassment over the past several decades. And I still haven't done my special on John McCain, and I will, but what an embarrassment John McCain has brought to the Arizona Republican Party, that he, you know, the things that he did and just tarnished that, the good name of the Republicans. Anyway, I am going on to a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Keith Broders. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. And as I promised you right before the break that we would have Keith Broders on, and he is the founder of the Constitution Club. We had an excellent conversation just the other day regarding the 17th Amendment and the recension and the process that the Constitution Club will probably be going down. I mean, we haven't gotten into the process and all of that. And that's one of the reasons why you want to join the Constitution Club, so you can get involved in helping change the political landscape of our republic. With that, though, I've asked Keith to come back on because I want to talk to him about his idea. He wants to go down this path of certifying. I wrote in my book about testing. Either way, we have to have a higher bar or a higher standard for who is representing us. And I think that's the basic premise, isn't it, Keith?
I certainly believe so.
Yeah, and so if the goal is to ensuring that we have expectations and that those expectations are being met, then we have to make sure that our representatives are literally legitimate, that they understand their job and so forth. So what would you propose for a certification test or what have you?
Well, I'd like to start off by saying that Benjamin Franklin wrote an article quite some time ago called The Dangers of a Salaried Bureaucracy. And in that article, he basically stated that one of the problems that could arise in our country is the fact that there are some flaws in human character. He says that there are certain individuals that have an extreme greed, and there's another group of people that have a tremendous lust for power. And if a person is able to find a job that allows him to satisfy his greed and his lust for power, he's going to be there. And what we have done with our system is we've created an opportunity for narcissists, egotists, and unethical criminals to aspire to be elected to public office. And so I believe that one of the things that we need to do is we need to do everything we can to test the ethical integrity of the candidates, but we also need to do some testing. So I wrote this little article, which I'd like to read to you for right now. It says, your dog needs a license, and so does your doctor, your dentist, and your lawyer. Stockbrokers, insurance agents, accountants, and teachers are all required to take a test to prove that they're qualified to do their job. But we don't require our congressmen, our congressional representatives, to prove that they are worthy to serve. How can we expect them to honor their oath to preserve, protect, and the Constitution if they haven't read and didn't understand it? Anyone who takes an oath to honor the Constitution should be required to pass a test on their knowledge of the Constitution and the principles of sound government. Every candidate for public office should be required to take a test on their constitutional knowledge, and their score should be published for all to see. You wouldn't allow a drunk man to drive your car, so why do we keep electing mentally bankrupt politicians who are determined to drive our country into a ditch?
Right.
So basically, I'm of the opinion that we need to have some sort of standard. It used to be when I was in eighth grade, we were told that we couldn't graduate from eighth grade until we took a civics test. That civics test was pretty amazing. And I think that we need to implement or maybe return to that test so that and not only that, I think, frankly, that before a person should be allowed to vote, they should also be required to take a civics test so that they know what they're doing. So anyway, these are a couple of the ideas that I have. I'm a fan of the Hillsdale College courses that are offered. They have a course called Introduction to the Constitution, another one called Constitution 101, Constitution 201, the presidency, and also the Federalist Papers. There's five courses that they offer, and each course consists of 10 lectures. Each lecture lasts a little less than an hour. So to complete their complete course of study on the Constitution would require about 50 hours. Well, if you're going to sell life insurance, you've got to take a lot more hours than that. And so I really think that maybe we should require that they take the Hillsdale College courses, and that their scores be posted on the internet for everyone to see how competent they are, how well they know and understand the principles of the Constitution.
Right. Well, so I'm actually, you know, I'm in favor of these types of concepts. I think that by creating a competition amongst states and allowing the states to try to figure out whether they want a license, because just like the board exam for a doctor or for a lawyer, just like those types of tests, if they want to have that rigorous of a test, or if they want to have a much simpler test. I will tell you this, that the listeners on this show, because they actually hear and are receiving the tidbits and the quotes and citations from both the Federalist Papers and the ratification debates, they should not have a problem passing the Hillsdale College tests and or their certifications. But more importantly, I honestly would like to see a very hardcore test where it is presented to the politician going into Congress in any form of legislative position, whether that be the county commissioner or supervisor or going into a state legislator position. I believe that those people need to be tested to say, hey, the federal government is going to give you a grant that, you know, if you can take this money, you can improve your bridges, but you're going to have to do these other things. Is that constitutional? I'd like to see them actually understand that they cannot do unconstitutional business with the federal government, and accepting grants is unconstitutional.
That is true. If you read the preamble to the Constitution, it specifically tells you what the government can spend money on. It doesn't say that they can spend money on social welfare. It says that they're going to provide for the common defense, not for the aggressive attack on foreign countries on foreign soil. So read the preamble, and it tells you what we can lawfully spend money on. And when Congress allocates money to spend it on the EPA or OSHA or unconstitutional things like the NDAA, the Patriot Act, the Planned Parenthood, and all these other things, these are not delegated or enumerated in the Constitution. Therefore, Congress is violating their oath of office by allocating funds to support these activities that are not delegated.
Right, absolutely. And even more specifically, they're violating the Constitution, and they're actually trying to get state legislators or state sovereigns, whether that be the county or state legislators, or even city councilmen, because sometimes cities get federal grants as well. They have no business trying to coerce cities, counties, and state governments into taking money so that they can restrict them and regulate them.
The same thing goes for foreign aid. Where in the Constitution does it say that we have the authority to give money to foreign countries?
It's not there, but the president, that discretion for the president of having a fund, having ambassadors, and being able to spend money on the emissaries, creating embassies and so forth, was granted to the president. But you're right, it is not there. But here's the other question, because as you know, at the very bottom of Section 8, you know, anything that is needful and necessary and proper for the execution of these foregoing powers, those 17 enumerated powers listed there in Article 1, is it considered necessary and proper for the federal government to issue passports? Well, yeah, I think somebody could probably go down that path and say, well, that makes sense, but it doesn't make sense that they issue curriculums for schools in the states, such as Common Core, and trying to establish standards, because that's not enumerated, but it is enumerated that Congress have the power to create a normal process for the naturalization of citizens, correct?
You bet.
And so, anyway, I think that this really starts forcing people to start understanding, and actually what you're talking about forces the dialogue amongst the electorate as well as the politician that, hey, you know, there should be a standard, and we want you to be able to not only pass that standard, but be able to speak to it as well. Because that, to me, is the true transparency in government. What do you think, Keith?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's amazing how we just seem to agree with each other on just about everything. I guess that's in our DNA.
I think that when somebody gets to a point where they've read a lot of the same stuff, you know, I have this premise, and if you've seen any of my presentations, I always say this, that reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And that's really the middle part is the challenge. Equally informed. Have you read the same stuff? Because you could find people that are equally informed, but not equally informed, if you know what I mean. They may have a degree, they may both have the same degree, but they didn't read the same material and the basis and so forth. And that literally can shape a big difference between how one thinks and the other thinks and so forth. So anyway, I believe that that's why the framers all agreed, because they all read the same books. They read Plato, Politics, and Cicero, and all of those things. So they all basically had the same foundation.
Anyway. Well, and one of the things that the founding fathers unanimously agreed upon, and that is the fact that a democracy was a very dangerous thing, and it was a government that was ill-suited for people that wanted to be free and independent.
Right. Well, hey, Keith, I want to thank you for coming on again. We've literally got a second left. Thanks again.
Thank you.
You bet. So, folks, we're at that time for a hard break. And so with that, that means that we will be coming back after a word from our sponsors. So please stay tuned. And again, we will be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so one of the things that I'm actually working on, I was just telling Keith this, that I'm actually trying to create a vetting process. So if you happen to be a part of a central committee at the county level, or at the state level, I'm working with Keith and a few other people to literally create a vetting process that holds a good battery of questions that you should be able to ask. And I'm trying to classify it by legislative. And what would be a legislative position? A legislative position would obviously be a congressperson, senator, or what have you. It would also be a state legislator for representative or senator. It would also be a county commissioner, a city council person, and or, you know, somebody that is writing and making laws, for whether that be a local level, county, state, what have you. And then I'm trying to create a vetting process for the law enforcement. So you've got sheriffs, and you have, you know, other types of agencies out there like public boards and public utilities, school boards, those types of things. So I want to have a different set of tests as well. But it's really important that you kind of put these into context so that these people that are seeking public office understand that there, even though they may not think there is a connection to supporting the Constitution, there is actually a direct connection to supporting the Constitution. As I put it into context, you know, when you have a state legislator or even a county commissioner or a city council person and they're running for office, they're up there and you have a question, hey, the federal government is offering you a grant for, you know, creating what they call the road diet, where they take a normal road and they force it down to one-way traffic, or not one way, but two lanes of bidirectional traffic instead of four or, you know, six lanes or what have you. And what they're doing is they're constricting traffic. And what the federal government, they have this program because they've been implementing this. And if you go online to the Department of Transportation, you will find, just Google traffic calming. This is literally the Agenda 21 implementation in your cities. They use roundabouts to traffic calm because what they do is they force you to slow down. And they're trying to make sure that you cannot speed and make it somewhere any quicker than a given amount of time. Why do they want to do that? Because they don't care about your productivity. They don't care about how well traffic flows. They want to slow it down because, bottom line, their objective is to get you to use or force you into using public transportation. They want you to move out of the country and into the city and use public transportation. That's their objective. They want to force you to change your behavior. And so asking direct questions regarding those types of things, very specifically, if you would you take a grant and what, you know, would you follow the rules or what have you? One of the things that is notorious behind these Agenda 21 issues is they have lawyers that literally go around and sue cities and counties and states for failing to follow the detailed instructions that came with those federal grants. Bottom line, those federal grants are unconstitutional. And so when you have somebody that is out there willing to accept these federal grants, then you literally have somebody in a political office that is violating the Constitution. Therefore, they're violating their oath. It doesn't matter if you need the money. You know, it's just the same thing. I mean, would you sell yourself for, you know, as a prostitute or what have you because you need money? Would you steal things because you need to eat? No. There are processes, that there are good compassionate services that will help you in feeding you, in helping you get back on your feet if all of a sudden you have lost, you know, if you've bad luck, let's just call it bad luck has fallen upon you. There are good compassionate services that will help you. You do not have to start committing crimes and doing things that are just bad. So, let me move on. I know I was talking about the Amazon as well as Apple and these big computer companies. Well, if you hadn't heard, it just broke today that apparently there is news that China has been inserting these small little teeny microchip processors on these servers that have been coming from my favorite company, Supermicro. So supposedly Supermicro has outsourced some of their computer motherboard manufacturing in China, where they've got four computer motherboards that are coming. And those are predominantly, I guess, what they're using in these big, huge server farms. Now, here's the thing. If you look at those big, huge server farms like Amazon AWS, they exclusively use Supermicro computers. Apple uses Supermicro computers. As a matter of fact, SGI uses Supermicro computers. And so just so you understand that Supermicro came right out today and got ahead of this and said, hey, you know, we do not have any of these microchips. Now, they're not aware of them, but they're not a part of their process and so forth. Now, whether they've been put on their, you know, there's investigations and there needs to be some further information that has to follow this. But I find this very interesting because, first off, CNBC is claiming that China owns this server company. And the truth is that Supermicro is actually American-owned and American-held. I remember the first time I used Supermicro, it had an American flag on the motherboard. Now, I get it with this whole globalization of everything. Everybody's being forced to, you know, move things around and so forth. The Supermicros that I purchased today are still being made in America, but I do know that their mass-produced servers that they do use in the cloud computing environment are probably being made overseas, whether that's Taiwan, whether that's China, I don't know. I'm not doing procurement for these cloud-based computer systems. However, I will say this, that, you know, the reason why I have always been a huge proponent and fan of Supermicro, I actually still have a server that I purchased back in 2006. And today I can still buy those parts. You got a Dell, you've got an HP, you've got some Compaq or whatever. If it is that old, we're talking 12 years old, can you actually go out and buy that exact same computer? You can't, but I can. And so Supermicro actually supports their product. And one of the things we were doing in engineering was instead of actually buying maintenance, because maintenance is a huge revenue source for HP, Dell, and these other companies, we just bought Supermicro and then just bought spares. We just have a few spares, and that's a lot cheaper than paying for maintenance. And 9 times out of 10, we never even had to dip into those spares. And as we progressed and as they grew, they go, hey, you know what? We need to use these spares for other things because we just can't see these good computers sitting here for nothing. So anyway, long story short, I know that there's some of this news, but there is a connection here because there's this other company that was associated to this news coming out. It wasn't just Supermicro. It was Elemental. And Elemental is it's an interesting Pacific Northwest founded type of company. And in 2009, Elemental formed a partnership with NQTEL, a venture capital arm of guess who? The CIA. Now, do you know who owns Elemental today? Well, they've changed their name to Elemental AWS. Does that kind of lead you down any type of path of understanding what that means? Well, AWS stands for Amazon Web Services. So in September 2015, Elemental was acquired by Amazon Web Services for $350 million. So I'm just literally jumping from 2009 to 2015. Amazon became the primary owner. Now, this whole process all started, again, with, like I said, the financing of the CIA. Now, I also told you a long time ago that the reason why Amazon was a company that was allowed to continue to, you know, take a loss, they should have been delisted. They should have been basically brokered, or I should say, actually gone into conservatorship and should have been sold off. The reason Amazon was allowed to exist in an operating of at a loss for so long was because they were working with the CIA and providing good information on you, your shopping habits, how often you use them, and so forth. And so in 2017, the company changed its name actually to become Elemental Technologies to AWS Elemental. The interesting thing, and I, you know, might as well throw this out here because it's a fact, but it kind of stirs this, conspiratorial theory. In August, just a few months later, 5 months later, Sam Blackman, the company's CEO and co-founder, died suddenly from cardiac arrest. Now, that would be a shocker if he was 60. It wouldn't be much of a shocker if he was in his 70s or 80s. But it's a total shocker because he was only 41. So that's something for you to consider.
as you start looking at how far the deep state goes and how much of it has something to do with our, you know, our these corporations that are literally dominating our entire consumption, our information, and everything else. So it's not a coincidence, my friends, that we're in this situation and we're being monitored. As you can tell, I'm up at a hard break. So when we come back, I'm going to get more into the ratification debates and literally the constitutional perspective. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And so I just want you to understand, and as I go through this, and as I've gone through the Constitution, everybody kind of scratches their head and goes, you know, how did we get here? Because technically, when you look at the Constitution, when you read these ratification debates, the Constitution was locked down. There was no way that the federal government could be used to pry money out of the people and out of the states on things it couldn't do. It was locked. What happened? How did it get unlocked so that the communists could use the federal government to buy votes? How did we get here? It took a lot of time and a lot of slow manipulation and slow, you know, hoodwinking and getting people to kind of go, okay, you know, just let this happen. Just let that happen. I'm going to tell you that the 7 hallmark cases that I point out in my executive summary, in my book, my second book, those cases actually created unconstitutional footings that down the road, people started exploiting. Those cases were done by John Marshall. John Marshall literally self-aggrandized the federal government's role. The Congress never felt, not even that they feel, they love the fact that the Supreme Court was stretching its jurisdiction. Because as the Supreme Court grew, the federal government grew. And everything was just hunky-dory as they started consuming more and more landscape in the political landscape. So what I mean by that is in politics, as they started consuming more and more and more, basically almost everything political they own or they tried to own. And then they started stepping into commercial and or commerce. And that is why they've practically nationalized the control of every facet of our life. And it's all unconstitutional. Now, some of the stuff may be really good and the states may want to continue doing that, but it's up for the states to decide if they want to do it, if they don't want to do it. And more importantly, it's up to the states, 3/4 of the states, to decide if they want the federal government to do it. So as I was saying yesterday, and before I really get into this, because I told you I'd give you the analysis on the last bit that I read from Mr. Wilson, when I read these documents from the framers, these founding documents, these legal appendages of the Constitution, I call the ratification debates, or we all call them that, but I refer to them as legal appendages to the Constitution, because they are explaining the Constitution. And so this little tidbit that I read yesterday, the highlight out of this is this, as he states this, this Constitution stands upon this broad principle. I know very well, sir, that the people have hitherto been shut out of federal government, but it is not meant that they should no longer be disposed of their rights. In order to recognize this leading principle, the proposed system sets out with a declaration that its existence depends on the supreme authority of the people alone. Now, Madison picked, I'm telling you, yesterday and today and always, Madison painted the most accurate picture, because these were we, the people of the state of Pennsylvania. Every state, and as a matter of fact, if you read the very beginning, the first, before it became we the people, because they made a major style change, and it was strictly style, but it put it into context. The very beginning of the Constitution started out, we the people of, and then they listed the states. The state of this, 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 the state of this. And as Madison stated in the ratification debates, it's not we the people as in a democracy of a national form. We the people of the citizens of the 13 sovereign states. So that is why the sovereignty of the states and the role of the Senate was so critical in self-guarding. And that's why in Article 5 of the Constitution, they placed a protection clause to ensure that the Senate and the states could not lose their suffrage in the Senate. Now, when I say the state, I mean the sovereign entity that's a perpetual entity that existed and has existed for over 200 years. Well, some states are less than that, but the states that founded this country, the founders, those organizations or those entities are perpetual. When people say that the founders died, I'm telling you, no, they didn't. The founders are the states. It was the founders that took, and that's why Article 7 clearly states who the founders are, who has to have buy-in. It wasn't the Rockefellers, Soros, and Gates. The founders were the states. And it was the people of the states that put together conventions to ratify and debate, to debate and ratify. And in that process, they discussed the details of this contract. Therefore, you really need to walk away with this one concept, that it is the states who are the founders, and it is the states who are the final arbiters and our biggest representatives in the federal government. That is why the concept of the states not appointing their senators is an absolute perversion, and allowing general election of senators is truly a consolidation of we the people getting everybody to go along with buying, or actually they're using force from federal taxes, taking from those who have to give to those who have not. That is a fundamental violation of the Constitution. The Constitution gave the federal government no authority to take from those who have to give to those who have not. They can't do that. A fundamental principle within the Constitution is the uniformity clause, that everything has to be done and applied uniformly. And a progressive tax is the antithesis of that. These concepts of corporate welfare is not the uniformity
It does not conform to the uniformity clause. I'm getting a little hyped up a little bit, but you've got to understand, when they did the TARP bailouts, that supported and basically propped up New York State. And all the rest of the United States was basically pitted against, or I should say, you know, did not get the same favors. The federal government does not have the authority to do that. That is a violation of the uniformity clause. Every time it bails out a state, every time it steps into a situation where it provides some type of an assistance for one cause or another, whether it be because of a natural disaster or whether it be because the banks have melted down, too big to fail, what kind of crap that they want to sell us, it is all crap. The federal government does not have the authority anywhere in that Constitution to be able to do those things. But they hoodwink us and they tell us, oh yeah, you let us do this and you guys can get this. And even though there's been enough idiots, and I should say dolts, that are willing to go along with these conspiracies and these concepts, that doesn't make it right. There's nowhere in the Constitution where the federal government says, hey, if we can fool you for 147 years and 3 months, it becomes constitutional and you have to amend the Constitution and allow us to do this forever. There's nothing like that. It's a violation of the Constitution, and when it gets pointed out, and when you finally have the epiphany and you realize, hey, these things are all wrong, then they're wrong and they have to be fixed. And that's why I can't wait till Bob Schultz, you know, where he has the time, I can talk to him, because he's pointed out some really good case law and some other things that he's been fighting and the things that he's been doing with the We the People Foundation, because he has some really good insights regarding are we really accountable to having to pay all of these debts that the federal government has been writing checks without authorization to do that. In other words, if somebody got a hold of your checkbook and they were writing checks and they created debt with your checkbook, let's say, hey, you know, this is, I'm just creating debt. I'm writing out these debts just because that's exactly what the Federal Reserve is doing. Are they or are you obligated, if they are doing it unconstitutionally and illegally and they've convinced you over time that this is a legal thing that they're doing and you allow them to do it, but when you find out that they really didn't have the authority to do this, that they did not, that they're literally violating the Constitution, are those debts legal? Are we legally obligated to paying those debts? I'm going to tell you, the answer will really upset a lot of people. And as a matter of fact, a lot of those foreign investors will not be happy when they find out the reality of some of this stuff. Because bottom line, they think that we've all been duped, and when it comes time for them to foreclose on us, we're going to willingly foreclose because we've been duped. We've been set up. And we don't have to be, my friends. That is why it's really important to get initial starting in your state, or get initial understanding, get this word out so that we can start working in every state in reclaiming the republic. I can't tell you that there is no other way, and I cannot tell you that you can find any better solution, because if you can find one, call in 215-867-8255 or Top Talk. I am G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. I'll be back tomorrow to close out the week. By all means, call me with a better solution. God bless. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.